I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. Senator Barack Obama's winning bid for the White House this week opened a new chapter in the way Americans perceive race.
To all those who have wondered if America's beacon still burns as bright, tonight we proved once more that the true strength of our nation comes not from the might of our arms or the scale of our wealth, but from the enduring power of our ideals, democracy, liberty, opportunity, and unyielding hope.
Today, we're kicking off our November series. It is on race, and it's getting below the surface on an issue that we often talk around instead of facing head on. Today, North Carolina's voter tally in the tight presidential vote was finally called for Senator Obama. Obama is the first Democrat to win that state since 1976. It's just one example of how the country is changing. So will our perceptions of race change as our country is led by an African-American president? And what effect is this going to have on African-Americans and all the people of this country? Do these examples from the campaign reflect how race is experienced in everyday America? For more, we have Matt Bai. He's a writer for the New York Times Sunday Magazine and author of The Argument, Inside the Battle to Remake Democratic Politics. Fernando Guerra, director of the Levy Center for the Study of Los Angeles, and political analyst Earl Ofari Hutchinson, author of The Ethnic Presidency, How Race Decides the Race to the White House. Hi, guys.
How are you?
Hey, Farai.
I'm doing great. So it is safe to say that there has never really been an election like this one. It's forced us to hold up a mirror to ourselves. And let me start with you, Matt. Senator Obama announced his candidacy for president on February 10th, 2007. You have been following right along with this. What challenges did covering race within the race present from the beginning in terms of trying to examine the issue respectfully and objectively? I mean, how did this change the game for even trying to transmit what was going on in this campaign?
Well, I mean, you know, for every candidate comes with certain challenges, I think, like that, you know, because you're always, your perspectives inform the way you look at everyone. And of course, your perspective informs the way, as it does for voters, the way you look at Barack Obama. It's impossible to extricate race from who he is. Impossible, by the way, to extricate generational change from who he is as well. And I think, you know, journalists had to be careful right from the beginning about stereotypes and code words and things that find their way into the media. But I think there's also the reverse is true, that most of us are of an age where we went through a lot of talk about race and diversity when we were younger. We grew up in the post-civil rights era, and so there's also a certain amount of political correctness that had to be dealt with, a certain amount of, I think, and when I say dealt with, I don't think it was always dealt with effectively, but I think there was a certain awareness that we needed to continue to hold him to a high standard of scrutiny, and that you couldn't really step around issues of race or be more careful with him simply because it skirted on things that were, as you point out in your introduction, uncomfortable for some of us to talk about.
Before we move on, just quickly, does anything come to mind as a concrete example of when covering Senator Obama's race brought up certain issues, there had to be certain judgment calls in how you covered it?
There definitely are. I mean, for me, I mean, you can look at examples in the media. I'm sure every reporter has their own, moments and examples. And you know, some of the, I mean, for instance, when Joe Biden, who was later his running mate, came out and said, you know, he thought Obama was a clean and articulate candidate. I mean, that raised a lot of issues, a lot of generational issues, a lot of us recognize the way our parents might talk about an African-American candidate. I mean, is it racism? Is it ignorance? Is it age? I mean, these kinds of conversations that we hadn't had before in politics. For me personally, I can tell you, I did a cover in the summer called Is Obama the End of Black Politics, which I'm proud of and which created a lot of discussion. But I can tell you that that's not a story I really wanted to do when we first started talking about it, because no white reporter ever goes off and tries to understand the psychology and the discussion in the black community. It's usually black reporters who get sent off to do that, and that's the main reason I ended up doing it and wanting to do it, was because I felt that we needed to sort of get beyond that separation, right? That's what reporting is. But it's the kind of thing that people in my business, you know, faced at different moments during this campaign, because we had to deal with issues we're not used to dealing with.
Fernando, as you look, we had over the course of the campaign, we had a black candidate who, of course, then went on to win the presidency. We had female candidates, including Senator Hillary Clinton and the eventual Republican vice presidential nominee, Governor Sarah Palin. And we also had Bill Richardson, who is Latino. And, you know, there were so many different cross sections of American society represented in different aspects of the campaign. How do you think specifically that Bill Richardson was or wasn't treated as a person of color or as a Latino? How did that? Some people said, oh, he's not Latino enough. Other people said, well, he's not white enough. So how did that fare? And in general, do you think that this election, as it was covered and as we Americans took it apart, did a good job of dealing with race, ethnicity, and gender?
The number one thing about Richardson was that he was seen as a legitimate candidate. He's got that last name Richardson, which most people don't even realize he's a Latino. So it really helped Barack Obama that we had a Latino, that we had women running. So he wasn't isolated. The second thing that incredibly helped Obama was that he was not primarily the black candidate. At the very beginning of the campaign, he was the anti-war candidate. So that was great for him. Then he immediately became the main challenger to Hillary Clinton. And so that was that focus. And then once he became the nominee, he was the main challenger to McCain and to Bush. And by that time, when he was the nominee, trying to label him as an extremist, a socialist, a black nationalist didn't work. It was seen as too political. So the fact that there was a Richardson and a Hillary at the very beginning, and then the fact that he took on the mantle as the anti-war, then the anti-Hillary, then the anti-Bush really helped him tremendously. And that was one level of analysis. But everybody, of course, knew he was black. And one of the ways he fought that, in a sense, was saying, I'm biracial, constantly talking about being biracial, which you hardly see black candidates talk about that. Even black candidates who have run for governor of California or Virginia, they really talked about having coalitions and being in part of a coalition government previously, that they worked well with other groups. They never said, I'm not 100% black. But in a way, he was saying that by emphasizing the biracial component. Very different politics that you ever saw. And I don't think it's, you know, that it's the end of black politics. It's just a whole new black politics that and expectations that are emerging.
Earl, we had a discussion, you know, offline among ourselves the other day about how much he did emphasize, Senator Obama did emphasize his history and his identity as someone who's biracial versus his identity as someone who's black. How do you think he defined himself during, I mean, recognizing that he was raised mainly by his white family, how do you think he framed his race? And how do you think black people addressed how he framed his race?
Well, see, I don't think he framed his race any kind of way, either biracial or African American or any point in between. You know, you mentioned earlier about the speech, the defining speech. And by the way, it is defining. I went back and read it. February 10, 2007, on the old Capitol steps in Springfield. I had to refresh my memory. It was a 25-minute and 27-second speech in which he announced, I am running for president of the United States. Race, the word race, was mentioned exactly one time, and it was mentioned generically. I am here to cut across, I'm paraphrasing, all lines, race, creed, and color. I thought it was very interesting. What he did, and I think many people didn't realize it at the time, including myself, he instantly took race off the table. He took it off the table right from the beginning with a speech, because the speech went on to talk about familiar things that we saw and heard in the campaign, health care, education, the war in Iraq, tax reform, poverty, generic issues that had the broadest appeal to the broadest segment of voters. It was very, very defining right there. And by the way, that theme, the multiracial, multiethnic, coalition, hope and change, building, extending across all lines, totally inclusionary, certainly played out and was continued to be his theme throughout the campaign. I thought he always stayed on point. He never strayed. He understood from the beginning the pitfalls and the minefield of race and how that could be a blowback. He also did his political homework and did something else. He looked at what happened with Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson. When they ran, they were clearly defined as race candidates. They were clearly defined as partisan candidates, and they were also clearly designed as candidates that can't win. He was determined not to make that mistake. He took race off the table.
It took some African-American voters a little while to warm to him. He did progressively much better with black voters over time. Do you think that was because of a strong identification with the Clintons or because people just said, it's not going to happen. Black man, no way.
Well, if you really look in the beginning, early on in the campaign, the Democratic, before the Democratic primaries, Hillary Clinton was a favorite choice of most African Americans, especially African American political leaders and elected officials. Now, how did that change? How did that dynamic change? It changed because he was able to do two things, and it was masterful. Number one, no racial identification. That was set in stone. But the second thing is he doubled back and actually did slightly play the race card in the sense of bringing Oprah in, went to South Carolina, appealed to blacks there, which is very important to jumpstart the campaign, the primary season. And guess what? He was able to actually masterfully juggle two ends. I'm the certainly man for everyone, but at the same time, I'm not running away from who I am, an African-American, not biracial, by the way.
All right. Well, that could start a whole argument, and I'm not taking sides, but because some people would say he's biracial, and I just won't get into that because that's for you guys to discuss. I just want to make sure that if you have tuned in midway, we're just talking about race and the race, taking a look back and a look forward. We were just hearing from Earl Afari Hutchinson, author of The Ethnic Presidency. Fernando Guerra is with us, director of the Levy Center for the Study of Los Angeles, and Matt Bai of the New York Times Sunday Magazine. In the time that we have left, I want to try to get to a couple more questions with each of you a little bit more quickly. Matt, I was just watching you last night on one of the webcasts that the New York Times has done. And the New York Times...
I was going to say, Fry, where was I last night? I can't even remember.
You were on my computer. You know, you guys have done some really great multimedia work. And it strikes me that one of the things that is very different in our evolving media landscape is that you can have... In some way, it's such a tough time for journalism overall, but at the same time, you can see people moving and talking and people from all over the world compiled into your video segments. What about the internationalism of this, how race played out internationally? What was the significance of that? Because so many of your videos concerned reaction from around the world.
Yeah, I noticed that too. I mean, I'm just a consumer like you are in that regard, and I noticed that too. You know, it's a really big issue, and frankly, I think it's a big issue with a lot of American voters who wanted to send that message around the world. It's one of the things, in one of the ways, and there were several in which race helped Senator Obama. I think is that a lot of folks said, you know, what a message this is going to send to the world, and you heard that from voters. You know, I think it's a big deal. I mean, American elections aren't really about the way the world views us, and you know, because of our geographic isolation and what has generally been our economic and military power, we're less sensitive about the way the world sees us than they probably are about the way we see them. But I think in this case, because of the legacy of the Bush years, because of the feeling of isolation, I think even given that Americans don't want to be isolated from the world, they don't want to be outside the mainstream, and I think we like to see ourselves as this great light of hope. We like to see ourselves as an example for the world, and it almost seems like in a flash, by electing Barack Obama, you know, we've at least given ourselves the opportunity to occupy that space again, and I think that's the reaction you sort of get back when you see those videos and see people from around the world.
Fernando, definitely, when you take a look at this, people, again, all over the world were very, very interested in this. Do you think that it does something to change the mix?
Oh, immediately. Number one, it's no longer a Republican Bush administration that's going to be in charge of foreign policy, but it's someone who's progressive and is used to dealing with different cultures, different races within his family, within the politics of Chicago, within the politics of the campaign. This guy knows how to maneuver in that minefield of different cultures, different languages, so they're going to be very comfortable with him. But he needs to be a little bit more forthright in dealing with some of those issues than he was in the campaign. He's no longer in campaign mode. Now he's got to really do policy and really speak to the issue. And I think African Americans and some Latinos are ready for that. I had 200 students at Loyola Marymount University doing an exit poll in Los Angeles, and 3.5 times the number of blacks over whites said that race was important in this election to them, in their selection. So 31% of all blacks who voted in Los Angeles, which had a tremendous turnout, said that race played a role in how they voted. Only 8% of whites, but 17% of Latinos and Asians said race was important. So there's a different way that we take a look at race, and blacks are willing to say race is important in politics and in other aspects. We're not going to deny it.
When you think about this situation, Earl, just quickly, do you think it'll make African Americans more able to reach outside of our box sometimes as nativists and see ourselves as part of the world?
The short answer is I would hope so. The longer answer is I'm not convinced it will, precisely because of what Fernando said. And certainly everything I saw, heard, both anecdotally and certainly in the polls, showed one thing. The tremendous appeal of Barack Obama, once in a lifetime, probably once in a millennium, was because he was African-American. The sense that now, quote-unquote, we have one of ours in the White House, that just pulsated through months and months of the campaign. Many times if you ask African-Americans, what's his stance on health care, what's his stance on Iraq, who cares? He's African-American, that's enough. Although many did take time, and they should, to look at his position. So really, yes, it will really come down to race, and it did come down to race. The longer answer is, and I'll make it short, I hope that there was another lesson that could be drawn. You build politics in the future, you can't do it in the old ways. You do have to have multi-ethnic, multicultural, reaching across the line, building coalitions with other groups. That's the key.
All right, gentlemen, thanks so much.
Thanks, Farai.
We were speaking with Earl Ofari Hutchinson, a political analyst whose book is The Ethnic Presidency, and Fernando Guerra, director of the Levy Center for the Study of Los Angeles. They joined us at the studios of NPR West, plus Matt Bai, author and writer for The New York Times Sunday Magazine.